Drupal Voices is short daily podcast interviews with people doing work in the Drupal community. Brought to you by Lullabot Consulting. Whether you need technical architecture, developer support, optimization and analysis, on-site training, or just general guidance for your Drupal project, Lullabot has led many of the largest Drupal projects in the world. Visit lullabot.com or call 877-LULLABOT to find out how we can help you with your next project.
My name is Gregory Heller, and I'm with Civic Actions, and we are a web development and strategy shop that has been around for about 5 years. And what we've been seeing recently is a lot of clients who are maybe late adopters determining that they need a website now, or they need a new website, really, and they are getting distracted with a lot of the bells and whistles that they've seen on other sites. And we're really doing a lot of work to bring them up a level to look from a strategic space. What is their vision for how they're going to use the web in total, not just a website, and then develop strategies and implementation plans that they can test out and use when the time arises.
So yeah, I guess you could sort of make a whole bulleted feature list of everything that you want and just glom it all together, but you're sort of saying to take a step back and figure out perhaps what their intention is, or maybe you could talk about what those questions are that you're trying to ask in order to draw that information out.
Yeah, so we get a lot of RFPs where people have maybe sat for like 6 months and they've asked every person in the organization, every division, what does our website need to have? What does our website need to have? And they probably haven't asked any actual users, any of their members or their audience, like what those people want to see on the website. So they come to us, perhaps, and other shops see this too as well, these 10-page feature lists, you know, and it's like a Chinese menu of options. And from the perspective of a firm that brings its value in developing strategy and implementation plans, when you see a list like that, an RFP that is so prescriptive, you know, you may as well just send that, if that's a spec, like send it out and have someone build it, you know, where labor is going to be a whole lot cheaper. So we like to work with the client to presence them to what are their goals, how are they going to measure success, what's the impact that they want to have, where do they see themselves or their organization in 1, 3, 5 years, and talk about the outcome, really. And that's what vision is. It's what is the outcome that you envision? You know, how is your website going to change people's lives or change the world or your web strategy? So what is this outcome? Like world peace. So there may be a lot of ways to get there and a lot of different strategic options that can be explored. One of them might be a website, another might be a Twitter campaign, another is a Facebook page. Maybe there's a contest on YouTube or something like that. And then specific implementations. So when we get down to that implementation level, it's really about figuring out who at an organization is going to do what, when they're going to do it, like how much time they have to do it, and how are we going to measure success, you know? And that's a piece that gets left off, especially for nonprofit organizations when it comes to the web. If you're a commercial organization, if you're selling something, measuring success is easy. It's conversion rate, right? Because there's a clear conversion. And for nonprofits that are looking to raise money, there's a clear success metric. It's how much money did we raise through our website. But if your goal is not to raise money, then it's a bit more amorphous. Like, is your goal to increase your media visibility? Is your goal to increase your mailing list? Is your goal to get people to take some kind of action, like send a letter or forward something to a friend? And as we move into this global graph, right, where things don't always happen on your website, where maybe it's we want people to retweet something and we want them to post something to their Facebook wall and we want them to respond to a YouTube video, for example, as three examples. Ensuring that the organization is going to have the resources to track that information, you know, like that tracking part often gets left off. So that's how they're going to determine success. So they need to know how they're going to measure it, that they're going to give someone the time to actually measure that, and that if it's not working, that they're going to stop doing it and try something else. You know, so the motto is, you know, fail early and fail cheaply, right? Fail fast, you know? And I was at an event, N10, and Beth Cantor shared something that one of her clients said, is that they actually celebrate failure. They have funerals for failed projects so that it allows people to be comfortable with the idea that, wow, if this thing fails, it's not my job. It's like, we tried it, it didn't work. You know, we maybe didn't understand our audience completely, but you know what? It didn't cost us $60,000 to get there. And now we have another plan in the hopper that we can try out. So that, again, is this having these strategic options really mapped out and implementation plans for the strategic options, you know, that you can pull out of a drawer and use.
And so in terms of tracking and, you know, having those metrics, are there specific Drupal tools that people should be aware of, or other outside third-party services, or is it just a matter of throwing resources and time and training at people in order to know how to do that?
You know, I think people talk about, let's say, the 80-20 rule, or maybe it's the 70-20-10 rule or whatever. You know, everyone sort of has a different kind of breakdown for it. What you spend on the humans in your organization and in your company should probably be more than what you spend on building the technology, because you need to ensure that you have the time to really follow through, whether that means writing content on a regular basis so that someone's blogging regularly, whether that's multiple times a day or multiple times a week, having people tweet if Twitter is part of your strategy, posting YouTube videos and having the time to do post-production, or just like you guys at Lullabot with the Drupal Voices podcasts, you know, you have the time to do it, so it happens, right? And if you don't actually budget that time, then it's not going to happen. So in terms of Drupal and measurement, you know, we typically use external analytic packages, but there are, you know, metrics for certain organizations that make sense, like how many new user registrations do you have, how many comments are getting posted. Those are two easy ways to kind of determine the health of your website or the growth of your community if you're building a community site. And then with external analytic packages, things like looking at what content is really successful, not content as a whole, not just looking at the top level, like, hey, we had, you know, 5,700 unique page views this month, or, you know, 10,000 visits or whatever it is, or our time on the site is a minute 50 seconds, but looking at, well, what was the one that was really successful? And then figuring out if there are trends, like all your posts about subject X are successful posts, we should actually write more about that, you know? So having a real feedback loop so that you can cull from what you're doing the things that aren't working and increase the things that are. I mean, it seems like this isn't rocket science, but I think that a lot of people forget that, you know.
And at the Do It with Drupal conference in New Orleans, we had Christina Halverson talk, because she's, you know, kind of one of the foremost experts on content strategy. And maybe you could talk about, you know, content strategy in terms of like setting those intentions and then how that ripples through how you're actually designing the site, if you're eliminating features or if it's like putting more emphasis on different stuff, so.
Yeah, it's a great question. We've been doing a lot of work with clients on content strategy. Take that back one level, it's actually understanding your audience and having user personas or personae. A picture, a name, a description of who it is you're writing for. And before you sit down to write any article or blog post, whatever, presencing that person that's on the other end of the internet tube and reading your article. And what is your vision for them? Right? What is this article going to do for them? So, okay, I know who it is in my mind that I'm going to write this for, and my goal is that they will donate $100, right? So now that you have that in your mind, you can sit down and you can write. The other piece of that is keywords. So really presencing, like, what are the keywords? It's total, keywords are a totally overused keyword, but we like to say, how do you think someone's going to find this? Right? Like, what are they going to type into a search engine that's going to lead them here? So think about that audience member. They are a person. They have a name. They have a job. They have a need. You want to satisfy that need. In order for them to find the information that satisfies that need, what are they going to type into Google and find you at the other end? Right? So think about those keywords, write them down, put them on a note card, stick it to your monitor or whatever, and then start writing. And then take a pass over your article when you're done. Make sure that you've used the keywords that you think are going to be meaningful. Make sure that you're speaking in the language that that audience member is going to understand. Format it in such a way that it is going to be visually appealing and easy to read. Probably if you're new at writing for the web, reduce it by a third in terms of the number of words and add some headers and some bulleted lists and things like that. And, you know, we're working with a lot of clients where their communications department has been very much in the write press releases and write newsletters for mailing. You know, that's the mode that they've been in for as long as they've been around. And the biggest mistake that I think any organization can make is assuming that the content that you write for a newsletter or a fundraising appeal or a press release can just be repurposed as a blog post and posted on your website, because that is not going to satisfy your audience's need.
And so when you look at Drupal and the Drupal mindset, you have like all these modules, and anyone comes to you and say, can Drupal do this? Inevitably, the answer is going to be yes. If it can already, it can do that. And so, but when you're talking about strategy, it's sort of like taking steps back and thinking about the strategy, information architecture, wireframing, and the design. Maybe you could talk about like the flow of how you prefer to do things with your clients.
Well, my motto is always add value. You know, it's sort of like the ABC, always be closing. I'm like, always add value, AAV. And any feature should add value for your audience. It shouldn't be a cool new feature because you think it's cool. And your audience might be your internal team members who are writing things and need an easier way to write things. So they need, you know, WYSIWYG and file insertion with auto resize for images or something like that. But each of those decisions about which modules to use or which functionality to add or keep should really be about what is the value that it adds, how does it serve our vision for the way that we're going to use the web and the way that we're going to use this website. So specific modules, I mean, I think it is very easy to have a kid in a candy store kind of mentality, especially if you're a Drupal developer and you want to play with all these great modules and everything. It's very easy to subconsciously try out new modules, add new modules, add new functionality. And I want to stress this, subconsciously upsell your client because you think it's cool. But we have to remember, as Drupal developers, we are outside of the mainstream. You know, we are edge cases. The way that we use the web is different from 99% of the other people who use the web. And we need to always, always, always remember those people in the audience. In Drupal especially, we call them users, you know, and on the web, typically in this industry, people who use a website are called users. And I saw someone once say, there are only two industries that call their customers or their audience users, drug dealers and web developers. You know, we really can't forget the fact that these are real people sitting in front of a computer or an iPhone or an iPad, and they are looking for information. They're looking to accomplish something. And that's what we need to make all of our decisions about the implementation, whether that's with Drupal or social media or anything else. The decisions, the implementation decisions, have to be made with the audience, with the people who are going to use the site in mind, and how does it add value to them? How does it help them get what it is that they need?
And finally, maybe you could just talk about the process in terms of, like, a lot of clients are probably already coming to development shops with an idea, okay, we want to use Drupal, we have an idea of this feature set. So talk about the process from taking that and then sort of talking them through how to take the steps back into thinking more about the content strategy and how that's going to sort of reform and maybe alter that vision a bit.
Right. We try and get them out of the implementation space and back up into that vision space and then into a strategy space and then in back down into the implementation. And oftentimes they'll see, oh, wow, we don't need all these bells and whistles, right? Like, wow, the solution you've come up with is actually much simpler and we like it much better. So one of the things that we encourage our clients to do early on is develop these user personas, which is really a profile of the people that are going to use the site, of their audience. And that includes things like, this is a person who didn't graduate college. They took a couple courses and then they went off and they work. And now they access the internet from their kid's computer at 9 o'clock at night for like a half hour to do some email and read some news or whatever, right? That changes tremendously how you think about what you're going to have on your website. When you think about how the person is going to be using it, they're going to be in a rush, their kid's crying, they got to get dinner on the table. And what do they need? They need to know when the next community meeting is. Right? They don't want to click around. They don't care about, you know, modal pop-ups and jQuery and Ajax and Flash videos. They want to hit the website, find out when the meeting is, get a map, done. So your question was, how do we work with clients to sort of back away from the features list? Some clients are resistant to that, and they're really, you know, become very attached because they've had this long process internally where they got sign off from every department and everybody got to throw their ingredients into the soup, and they don't want to go back. And those are the types of clients that are going to find it challenging to have a successful web project. They may get a website launched, but there are all kinds of challenges along the way. And I think that we like to encourage organizations, whether they're for-profits or nonprofits, to really look at identifying potential development partners at the beginning of the scoping project, right? Bringing a development shop in at the end to then develop against this spec that you created internally, it's not the same as bringing a contractor into the home building process after you've worked with an architect, because the tools that development shop is going to use in some ways do have an effect on dictating the features, the design, the information architecture to an extent. And again, I think where you get a lot of value with working with a lot of the types of shops that are here at DrupalCon is their expertise, having built Drupal sites for 3 or 5 or 10 years. You know, they have experience on the web, experience with the tool, and if you just say, hey, build from this spec, you miss out on a lot of that value. So, you know, we'd encourage organizations that are looking to build websites to identify development partners early on in the process. We suggest paid scoping and discovery with someone who's going to use the type of tool that you're familiar with. And then if the relationship works out in that paid discovery period, well, you can go and you can work with them and you already have a working relationship established and everything. Or if, you know, the fit isn't exactly right, they've developed something that they thought they might build, which means it's probably a good solution, and there are a whole host of other development shops that you can go to and say, oh, we worked with company X and this is what they came up with. How does this sound to you? You know, what would you do differently? And let's go, let's run with it and build it.
Okay, well, great, thanks.
Great, thank you.